Welcome to Bitches on Comics. I'm your host, S.E. Fleenor, and I'm here today with your other host.
Oh, me, Sarah Century. Welcome, everyone. Always so good to not see you.
To sense you. I sense you.
The
disturbance
that you
in the
are
force.
Here. Yes. And once again, welcome. It's great to have you all here. Today we have a very special guest, Yoshi Yoshitani. Welcome, Yoshi.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
Woo! If you somehow don't know who Yoshi is, which I don't mean to be like rude. I know who Yoshi is and I'm a little bit into Yoshi's whole deal. But Yoshi is an incredible artist. You do comic art and you do cover art. So you do both sequence and cover art. And then I don't know how to describe like Beneath the Moon. How do you describe that project? I'm like, let's start really hard.
Good. Okay. Nice softballs. I love this. That started, I guess, like to unpack it. It started with me making the Tarot of the Divine project. And to even go backwards on that, I guess like for me, one of the key things that I've always been interested in is symbolism and symbology, how different cultures, different time periods react to visual shorthands for really complex ideas. I think you can think about the language of flowers, for instance, a red rose meaning love, a yellow rose meaning friendship. And of course, that's the European tradition. It's not even referring to what the language of flowers means in other cultures. But, you know, it's just something that I've been interested in. And tarot is, of course, a huge source of visual iconography. If you're unfamiliar with tarot, it's 78 cards where each card has an image on it that is supposed to relay a complex idea about kind of the human experience. So, you know, you'll, for example, the first card in the series is the Fool. The Fool is supposed to represent the beginning, you know, someone who is foolish but expectant, who's starting on a journey, but also has kind of the knowledge of innocence, if that makes any sense. So, like I said, there are 78 of these. It's really complex. It's really interesting. And I had been interested in making a tarot deck of my own for a really long time. But I don't know, it's just really hard to do 78 images, to draw them, to try and make like that symbology. And definitely when I was researching tarot decks and the Rider White, which is the most popular version out there, was just, it has symbolism that is dated. It doesn't make sense in the modern day. Like there are some cards that have like, this is a red rose on top of a white rose, and therefore it means this, and we all know this. It refers to symbolism that we don't use as much nowadays. So it's not as relevant. I've seen tarot decks, which I think are really interesting, that have replaced the iconography instead with emojis. So it kind of looks like a text message conversation. Yeah.
How modern. I love that.
Yeah, I think it's really cool because it helps, like, again, people in the modern day kind of relate to it and have like sort of the understanding that people did with these older decks. I think one of the things that is also interesting when we're talking about like emojis, for instance, is that there are like, for example, the alien head emoji. They're very obviously, this means an alien, and you'll have like ideas about what an alien means. But also, I have a friend who's bald and he uses that icon to represent himself all the time. So, you know, like if for him, if he were to pull open this like emoji tarot and like he would flip over the card with an alien symbol on it, he's probably going to self-identify with that in addition to what its original meanings are. Anyway, that's one of the things that I find really interesting about tarot is it has multi-layered meanings where it's the visual, what it's supposed to mean, what it means to like a society, but then also what it means to you individually. So, like I said, that's the big thing about why I love tarot. And then additionally, I have been interested for a really long time in fables and mythology and folklore from around the world. it's definitely one of the things that I found, because I'm mixed race and multiracial, and how, like, there is no society that doesn't have a fairy tale, fable, mythology sort of tradition. Like, every single society talks about these stories. Everyone has, like, a way of kind of passing on knowledge. There are stories about, like, this is how the world was formed, or this is why we do things this way, or, you know, just, like, various things, or just, like, fun stories that are just ridiculous and you tell each other, like, over a campfire. Anyway, just like I said, everyone has these stories. They're really important to us. And for me, having something that is familiar to all portions of me, even being multiracial, was really important to me, and just something that, like, I really connected with. So yeah, I guess, like, just like one day I was kind of puttering around trying again to make a tarot deck, and I suddenly realized that the kind of themes and concepts that appear in tarot are the same themes and concepts that appear in mythology and folklore, which obviously makes sense because, you know, the tarot deck is supposed to be about the human experience in 78 images, and mythology is about the human experience in, you know, these kind of grander terms. Yeah, and so I started kind of matching up stories, and a lot of them just clicked super easily. And that's when I was like, wow, I guess I should just keep doing this. And yeah, 78 cards later, I had it. It was great. Yeah. And so, and then kind of like in a more mundane sense, you know, I had these images and I had these cards, and then I got approached by a publisher to not only make the tarot deck, but then also make Beneath the Moon, which is the collection of all 78 stories. So it's nice this way for people who aren't interested in tarot, they can just get the book, which will have, like, you know, the stories and the artwork, and get into that. Or if you're into tarot, you can get the tarot deck too. And yeah, and then I guess, like, the last thing for me, again, that was really important is, like, because again, like I keep saying, like, I'm mixed race, and there isn't a lot of work out there that celebrates people being mixed race. You know, it's just, it's hard to experience being mixed race in a way that celebrates every component of you. A lot of times in the world, I'm sort of like, I'm supposed to prioritize which side is more important, like which side people want to hear about more, which is, you know, like, it doesn't do justice to the full experience and portion of me. And so, yeah, I just wanted to really make a tarot deck because all 78 cards have, like, equal weight and importance. It feels really nice to be able to hold, like, two different cards from two different cultures that, you know, represent me or represent, like, my friends, and just have them next to each other. Be like, yes, these two things are equally important and they exist in this same world beneath the moon. And yeah, she just, I don't know, it just feels really nice to see them together.
I use your tarot deck regularly. My partner and I both do. And my partner has been exploring, you know, more dimensions of themselves as she's been, you know, learning about witchcraft and other things. And so it's been really powerful to have something that's so story rich to use. I've used a couple other decks as well. And I mean, there's so many cool ones. So I love lots of them. And what I found unique for me, at least with Tarot of the Divine, is that, like, my readings have so many layers to them, because I'm connecting with the stories on top of, you know, the Fool. You know, I'm connecting with all the pieces that go into the story as well. And I think that's just so exciting and special. And whenever I end up talking about religion and stuff, I studied religion for many years. People are always like, well, what do you believe in? And I'm like, ha-ha, stories. I believe in stories. And I believe in people. And I think that stories is one of the ways we make meaning in the world. And so I think it's really exciting to have a tarot deck that is, you know, I totally agree with you. Tarot is a story. And yeah. It's a story of stories. And you can tell yourself a story. And then you take these fables and traditions and parables and you layer that in. And it's like, oh my God, it's so rich. And there's so much to take from it. And the art is so beautiful. Every card, I, like, no matter how many times it's come up when I've read, I look at it and I'm like, oh, I never saw the bananas in the background before. Like, the bananas. Today, that was me looking at one of the cars. I was just freaking out about the bananas. So I think it's something really special, and I'm so glad you made it. Is tarot part of your practice and a way that you make meaning in the world?
I would not say that I am like a tarot reader in the same way that I think other people are deeply entrenched in that. But I guess like the way that I also think of tarot is like really cheap therapy. So it's like, you know, it's...
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I was telling my therapist that. I was like, this is how I get between sessions. I do some tarot.
Yes.
Reflect on my feelings.
That's literally me like reading my horoscope. I'm just like, please tell me what to do today. And then I like look at it and it's just like, Aries should try really hard not to be a jerk. And I'm like, oh my God, I am going to try not to be a jerk. Thank you, horoscope.
Well, it's like, I think like, you know, you'll get readings where they'll be like, be careful, like, of a dark stranger who means you ill or something. Mm. And like, what's the exact first thing you think of when someone says that to you? That's like your subconscious reaching out and being like, this is a thing that you've been worried about that maybe you haven't been thinking with like the front part of your brain, but you are worried about with like the subconscious part, you know? Because I mean, like, it could be like, yes, like my boss has been like a looming force upon me. Or you can be like, oh, that's like, it's me, it's my darker self that's looming in front of me. Or you're like, I have been really mad at my best friend for like this thing that they said. You know, it's like, so what is the first thing you think of? So yeah, like I said, it's cheap therapy. I think it's pretty effective when you can use this as like to do a read on you. I have done readings for people, like especially when we were doing conventions more, and there'd be like kind of a lull in the convention cycle. Be like, oh, you want me to, I can do a quick reading for you. And I have done readings for people where they are uncomfortable at how accurate it is. And I felt like maybe I had to stop doing that. So
right.
I was like, sorry to be here in the convention floor and telling you that you have like unresolved issues with your family. I'm just gonna, never mind. Have a nice day.
Right. I'll pack this up and go.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, we had Rachel Pollack, the writer of the post Grant Morrison Doom Patrol on, and she has written a bunch of books about tarot and has incorporated it into her work. And of course, that volume of Doom Patrol has a bunch of tarot references in it. The conversation that we had with her, she was talking about how she discovered tarot alongside all of these other kind of life revelations. It was her coming out, having connections with her queerness, and then being like, and also I'm into tarot now. That's like my thing. So I was curious, whenever you did get into tarot, did you have anything else where you were, it was corresponding to other events in your life that made it extra meaningful for you? Or was it just something that you just kind of picked up along the way?
I guess it's just something that, like, tarot is something that's always been kind of in my periphery that I've always kind of been interested in. And like I said, for me, it was just one day finally having the epiphany of being like, these are two things that I really love. Of course, it makes sense to combine them. That just, it really worked. I mean, also, like I said, I've been interested in tarot for, I don't know, like at least since like middle school, like a really long time. But I had a really hard time remembering any of the meanings to the cards. Just like, I could not do the rote memorization. It was another reason I tried to dissect the symbolism of each of these cards. I thought that if I could understand the symbolism, it would help me better with the cards. But again, a lot of the symbolism kind of, that's like rote memorization. Like, I'm not familiar with Hebrew script and like all the ins and outs of meaning that. And of course, that helps you understanding the Rider-Waite tarot. Anyway, it's like I said, it's a lot of layers and it was stuff that was just really hard for me. But for me, again, being able to combine tarot cards meanings with fables and mythology was a lot easier for me because I can remember the story and kind of the ins and outs and the nuances of a story, you know. And also, I think it's interesting because if a tarot card, you know, like a tarot card has nuance, it should have some multifaceted meanings to it. You should be able to look at it in the context of one reading and it has one meaning. And then when it's next to another card, it has a different meaning. You know, on any given day, it should have kind of a different reflection. And so the way I think about it is with the Tarot of the Divine, you kind of think about what part of the story is relevant to you at that given time. Again, with like the Fool, I combined that with the Little Mermaid. And so when you get the reading, are you thinking about, is this the Little Mermaid? Has she gotten her legs yet? Has she met the prince? Like, is she turning into sea foam? Do you not believe in that version of the story? Because again, that is also like, even the author himself, Hans Christian Andersen, he debated
like the ending, because there are a couple different endings to The Little Mermaid there. And then, of course, there's the Disney version. And then, of course, there are many, many, many modern day variants. I think that there is a YA book that is out where The Little Mermaid kills the prince and eats his heart to live. I don't know. There's like lots of different ways that you can kind of think about what The Little Mermaid means to you and what that story means and if it's an empowering story or not. So, yeah.
I like the one where she eats the heart. That seems really cool. Yeah, I was also wondering, I was looking at Zatanna in the House of Secrets, and I was thinking about, because I love Zatanna so much. This is like a character that I have just always been so in love with. And her comic material is really sparse. There's a lot of appearances now more, but I remember whenever I was a kid, if you were like a Zatanna fan, you could not find too much out there for Zatanna. Have you been a fan of Zatanna for a long time? And is it kind of intimidating to work on a character that hasn't had enough good stories, but also is so, so iconic?
Oh my God. Well, actually, so I originally got approached by DC to work on another young adult graphic novel for them. And like, I won't reveal it, but the protagonist was a male protagonist. And they were like, would you be interested in this? And I was like, you know, thank you so much for this opportunity, but I don't really like drawing a lot of dudes. I would actually prefer if I could draw like a female character. And they were like, do you have a list of like female characters you'd like to draw maybe? And I was like, number one, Zatanna. And then I was like, I don't know, number two. And I like named off a couple more.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, I would love to draw Zatanna. That would be my number one. And they were like, oh, actually, we do have in the lineup like a Zatanna comic. And, you know, we have like the writer for it and we have like the initial script. So if you're interested, yeah, this would be a great fit. And I'm like, yes, put me on it, please. Thank you. So, I love Zatanna. She's so cool. Like, she can really hold her own. She just has like so much personality. And I will say that I myself am a sucker for any character that has even a whiff of a trickster type of in themselves, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I will also say that like upon greater reflection, I'm like, it's because like tricksters are just like innately bisexual or pansexual. So like there's just also
thank you
so much. Yeah. So there's so much there. But yeah, so I was really happy to be able to work on Zatanna. Yeah, like she's just so cool. And then one of the things that was nice too was DC came up and they said that these graphic novels are almost like alternate universes of these characters. So for their young adult line and for their middle grade, they were saying with those ones like, oh yeah, you know, they should hearken back to the characters and they should make people who have never heard of these characters before interested in them, but also it doesn't have to have like any greater reflection upon like the larger universe. Like none of this is like particularly canon, which makes it so much better because there's like unlimited possibilities. Like you don't have to worry about like messing anything up because it's like in its own kind of bubble universe where you're just getting people interested in the character and being like, why should you love Zatanna? And it's like, you should love her because she's awesome and amazing. So
I was going to say, too, that Mariko Tamaki has done a bunch of books like that, right? Like,
yes.
The Being Supergirl series that was so, so good. And then Harley Quinn Breaking Glass. And then, of course, you all worked on I Am Not Starfire.
Yes.
Obviously, a very skilled writer. Like, we are huge, huge fans. And even whenever I feel like there's more of a straightforward superhero book, like X-23 or something like that, it still is, it's just brilliant, like every time, right? But I do think that there is something to kind of just being able to drop a lot of the long-standing baggage of superhero comics sometimes and just to be like, hey, we live in a different world right now. So do you think that that's something that just encourages a lot of freedom on your part?
Yeah, and I mean, like, it's definitely true where there are a lot of comic book characters and stuff that I would like to read more on, but it is just so daunting because you can't just walk into the store and pick up a Superman comic because if you do, it's going to refer to all the previous Superman comics. And I mean, like, I think about even picking up, like, an issue of Runaways, which is, like, a relatively more recent kind of superhero series that there's just so much backstory in each of these that you can't just like enjoy it. I guess it's like, I find that a lot of times when I pick up like a comic book, I end up like going to the Wikipedia to be like, wait, what happened? And I will be given the backstory of like 20 years worth of comics just to even catch up to what's happening now. And God forbid they have a cameo of like another superhero that appears one issue. Then you're like, fuck, who is this? What's going on? So, I mean, like, I think that's one of the things that's definitely like a charm of comics. Absolutely. It's like really cool to just be like, you know, when you have so much knowledge and you're like, it rewards you for that knowledge.
Yeah, because it drops all the little Easter eggs throughout and stuff. I grew up like reading comics, and so I definitely like walked right into like the middle of X-Men stuff as a kid. And I'm just like, yeah, it's so wild. But yeah, as you were saying.
No, I mean, like I said, I think it's like super rewarding once you're in it, and it's awesome. But I think a lot of times it's like starting Game of Thrones from book four, and you're like, what the fuck is going on here? You know, and I think it's just, it can be really hard for first-time readers or people who are like just trying to jump into that. So yeah, that's like basically what DC is trying to do with these like young adult graphic novels, is get people interested in the characters first, and then allowing them to go do the research and figure out and join in on the larger scale comics later.
Yeah, and that's going to obviously just bring in so many new readers, because it really is a little bit intimidating, right? I don't super know, because like I said, as a kid, I was like picking up every comic already. So I'm used to like just ignoring the like, see Captain America 353, like, or something like that. Like, I'm like, you know what? I can ignore like massive plot details sometimes in comics, because I'm there for the vibes for the most part, right? Like, but not everybody is like me, you know? And like, there's a bunch of people who are just like, I would love to read these characters. And especially since it's been so alienating for so long, right? Like, there is always like kind of a long history of a lot of people weren't necessarily encouraged to get into comics. And so I think that it can only bring in a new readership, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, there's a lot of awesome stuff there, you know, again, especially because there's so many like movies and stuff, and I'm hoping for a Zatanna movie. That would be awesome.
Oh, wait. So Emerald Fennell, right, is like going to be writing the script for the movie, I think, just got booked.
And until it is in theaters, I don't believe it, because I have been led astray too many times by false promises.
Yeah. I understand. I remember getting super excited that, oh, and then I was just like, am I being foolish?
I will know. I mean, the number of times that I've seen people
be like... I was
like,
wait a minute, the New Mutants had like 35 trailers.
I know, there was a lot of trailers for that one.
Like, the number of times too where people have been like, this book, the rights to this book have been bought to be turned into like a TV series or a movie or something, and then just like I see nothing from it. I'm like... Until it is in my hands, I will not believe it.
Right? Because like Sandman, right? Like, they're just now making that. That took like... That took a long time.
Hey, listeners, thanks for being with us here today. Maybe you don't know, but Sarah and I actually run a whole host of projects. This is SE. Hopefully you know my voice, because I probably introduced myself in this episode, but who knows?
Better do it again.
Yeah, why not? And we actually have a publishing house called QueerSpec. You can always go check it out. It's at queerspec.com. And that's where we host this podcast, Bitches on Comics, another cool podcast we're working on called Tales of the Sapphire Bay Hotel. If you want to know more, go to queerspec.com. And we have this very cool project called Decoded Pride. Decoded Pride is our story a day anthology of LGBTQ stories by LGBTQ creators. We're an independent series of projects, so everything that we fund ourselves. So that means that Sarah and I are out here hustling as freelancers. We're making money and sending it right into our other projects. And also eating sometimes. Sometimes.
Ramen.
Delicious. So Decoded Pride is amazing. I mean, we have so many stories by so many diverse voices. We have so many gender variant authors that we're publishing. We've got comics, science fiction, fantasy, horror, the whole shebang. And you can just go check us out at decodedpride.com. Go buy a subscription right now. We want you to be with us reading these stories and helping prove there's an audience for queer stories by queer creators. So we talked a little bit about your like origin story around tarot, but we haven't talked a lot about comics. And I read in an interview that there was a moment for you when you discovered manga that was really revelatory. And I was curious if you'd be willing to share with us a little bit about that and then what other comics you were reading when you first got started.
Yeah, the big thing for me definitely was I moved around a lot as a kid. And I remember moving to California at the time in middle school. And it was like the first time that I was like really hanging out with like peers that were also like East Asian. Like I said, being mixed race, it's like weird, it's difficult. But it was like really, it was the first time that I was like all of a sudden kind of around peers like that. And they all had comics, like manga. And a lot of it was like stuff that they had been reading like in Cantonese, but then they had like English versions of it too. And it was just like, it was the stuff that was just absolutely mind-blowing to me because it was art, but it was also like stories. It was a lot of shoujo. Like before that, I had only kind of seen comics that were, you know, like X-Men, like really geared towards boys and men. And just like reading shoujo and seeing that was just like absolutely mind-blowing to me. Like, wait a sec, this is like a girl going into a magical land and as she's surrounded by hot dudes, what the fuck? This is awesome. And, you know, just like seeing like that. And again, like, you know, it was like kind of a way also to connect to like some of my Asian heritage too. Just like this manga, even though obviously like a lot of it's like, it's exaggerated. You know, it's like, this isn't actually how high schoolers live. They aren't actually jumping on rooftops in Japan. You know, it was like still kind of like a way to connect to like that part of me. So like I said, it just like it hit me on so many fronts, on so many levels. And I was voracious. Like anything I could get my hands on, I was reading it. My friends and I, we were going to like the Kinokuniya Japanese bookstore near us. We would like trade issues. I remember we were reading like Ranma 1/2, which was another one that was like a big, big impact on me, which if you are not aware of it, it's this Japanese manga by the same mangaka who wrote Inuyasha, but Ranma 1/2 is like more of a comedic martial arts comic. And the kind of twist in that is the main character, Ranma, is a dude, but he's fallen into a magical spring. So now every time he gets splashed with cold water, he turns into a girl. And every time he gets splashed with hot water, he turns back into a dude.
What am I doing with my life and how have I not read this?
I know. I was like, where the fuck is this magical spring? Give this to me.
Yes, I sign so up happy. Right now. I'm signed up for the spring. This is going to solve a lot of problems for me.
Oh my God, I know, right? Like I said, it was like one of those things where it hit me and impacted me and just sat and ruminated in the back of my mind for many a year. But yeah, like I said, it was just like super impactful. Like my friends and I, like I would buy issue 1 and then I would have friends buy issue like 2 and 3 and someone else would buy 4 and then I'd buy 5 and we're just like all passing them around in our lockers, just reading the heck out of them. And yeah, I actually remember that we also had joint comic books where like I would draw a comic, like a couple pages. Another friend would like read it and pass it back and I would draw a couple more pages and we just kind of keep passing them around. This is also in the days before the internet to really have that kind of like virality. I'm also thankful that none of this stuff is online because it's probably like garbage and I don't want to have myself associated with that. But
do you know what the like any of the stories were about?
Oh, you know, I mean, like I can't really remember, but I mean, like I was in middle school. I was it was probably just like reiterating whatever I was reading at the time, you know? Mm-hmm. Like I said, for me, another hugely impactful one was Fushigi Yugi. And that one, she's like a girl who gets sucked into a magical book. And like, it's so funny because she's wearing like modern day, like a Japanese uniform, but she's in like ancient China, supposedly, but with magic. And then of course she like instantly meets a super hot dude who saves her. And then she's got kind of like a harem of other hot dudes that all help her out on this magical quest. Anyway, like I said, it's just like, I was like, this is the coolest fucking
awesome.
Thing. Yes. I mean, like I said, it's just, it was so impactful
And I can't emphasize that enough. Being like, this is the coolest stuff. And like, you know, I think it also kind of like redefined for me what comics could be, like who they could be written for. You know, they're also like, I remember liking Marmalade Girl, which was like, it's all about her parents like remarrying this other couple and like her falling in love with like their son, who happens to be also in high school. And it's like very drama, but like super low key. I'm like, this is great. Just like, you can just have stories where it's just these two people in school and they just got flowers around them all the time. This is great. I love this.
I'm always curious for artists, like, can you see the influences on your art when you look at it? Like, can you tell where manga has influenced you or not, or any other for really, for that matter?
Yes, I would say absolutely. Yeah, I think these pages have been released, but we're talking about the I Am Not Starfire. That one that I did with Mariko, it does have a love interest story in it. So it is about like the main character and kind of her relationship with this other girl. And I was like, this is great because every time the girl shows up in the book, I just throw shoujo flowers behind her to kind of give that vision of like, here's our main character just like looking at this girl and being like, oh, she's so cute. Like, I can't even. Which I love that.
I cannot wait. I cannot wait. Oh my gosh. I Am Not Starfire. It looks adorable.
Yes. I just wanted to put as much like gay panic as possible into it, you know?
I love that idea. I think that's one of the special things about comics is that you can sort of like slip through someone's perspective. And, you know, some comics, like whenever I read Deadpool, it's like, this is all from Deadpool's POV, guys. Like, you can't trust any of this. Like, don't yeah, trust yeah. Deadpool. Don't trust Deadpool. It's a rule. You know, but then you go over and you're like, oh, Black Widow, whoever. And I think that that's so fun that we get to see through, and I cannot remember her name. What is the daughter's name?
It's Mandy, but yes, she.
I love that we slide into her eyes and get to see like how she looks at this other girl. That like my heart is so warm at that.
Yes, I mean, like I said, I really wanted to draw Mandy looking at Claire and just having that kind of like, oh God, she's so cute. No, I mean, like I don't like her. It's fine. It's cool. We're cool. You know, just kind of capture that. Like vibe and feeling, especially because, like, you know, she's in high school, so she's still having this kind of, you know, young early crush situation going on where she's like, I don't know what to do with this. Are we just hanging out? Maybe we're more than friends. Maybe this is just a school assignment. I don't know. What do you think? I don't know. Whatever is cool, it's fine.
I appreciate it. I think there needs to be a little more awkward queer representation. Maybe not, but I need more of it. Maybe there's enough for other people. Like Alex Strangelove, that was a pretty good one, but, you know, very mask. I feel like I need more sapphic awkwardness in my life.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think like, I also think this, and this is not just about queer representation. It's definitely, I also feel this way about like, you know, what it means to be mixed race or what it means to be like Asian in America or like all these different things. But, you know, just more stories being told is better, you know, because I know that there are a lot of people out there for like any piece of media that comes out. People say like, well, that doesn't represent me. That's not how I feel. That's not like my queer story or my Asian American story or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, it's not mine. You know, and it's like, yeah, okay, I totally get that it's not yours, but it's probably somebody's, and you should also get your story out there. Like, it really sucks when there's only one story that literally, like, an entire population is supposed to hang their hat on, you know, and so I think just, like, yeah, just telling more stories. So I don't think that there is a wrong way to tell a queer romance. I think the only wrong way is to only have one version of it.
Totally. I think Sarah and I talk about that a lot in the pod of if it's queer, we're like, we're in. And it's like tragic, love it. Like hopeful, love it. Deals with homophobia, I'm in. Like coming
evil
out
lesbians.
Story, why not? Evil lesbians, sign me up. You know, like Debs, I love it. You know, I don't care. And so I think that we're right there with you, Yoshi, and the idea of like, there needs to be a proliferation. It's not about finding the right story. It's about there are many stories that have, you know, lowercase t truths in them. And for someone, they might have a you know, an uppercase t truth. And that's beautiful. That's the, I mean, I think at least the point of stories is to connect with each other in ways that, especially with fiction, that are really hard to do when we're just, you know, like here's what I believe. Here are my facts. Here are the facts of things I think about the world. It's like, oh, here, let me share this story with you. And suddenly there's like a secret language. You're like talking about the story and the content, and you're connecting with someone in a whole new way. And that's so much what I see in your work too. Is I was reading some of the stories from Beneath the Moon right before we hopped on the call, and just like crying, just like bawling my eyes out. And I'd be like, why am I crying? I'm like, I don't know, because I just love stories and this is so hopeful and so beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think that's a great like way to kind of bring that back to is also like the way you interpret each of these stories. You know, especially some of these like older ones, there are just so many variations and variants on them. It's kind of like which ones have been recorded, which ones have been allowed to be passed on. Like, there are a lot of queer stories that just basically didn't make it past the church, you know? Like, even in Japan, there is these ideas that some of these stories had queerer origins, but then there was, like, during one of their revolutions, they kind of did a large purge, and they were like, never mind, we don't do the queer stuff, none of that anymore. And so, you know, again, what has been, like, allowed to be kind of passed on, but also, like, what can you sort of read between the lines and be like, this seems mighty suspicious. I mean, one of my favorites definitely is like Enkidu and Gilgamesh, which is the Two of Cups in my deck. But that one, it's like, here's this guy who is two-thirds god, and he's just fucking all the women in his like kingdom constantly. Like, he's doing prima nocta. He's like, oh yeah, you can get married, but I get to fuck you first. And he's just like, everyone is like, oh my god, we're so exhausted because he has so much sexual energy. And the gods are like, okay, cool. We're going to make Enkidu, who will be Gilgamesh's perfect match in every single way. And then they meet up and they wrestle for like 3 days and three nights. And Gilgamesh barely wins. And he's like, wow, you're so awesome. We're going to be besties. And then he never sleeps with anyone else ever again. And then there's like passages later where like Enkidu wakes up in the middle of the night from a nightmare. And Gilgamesh is like, are you okay? Because they're sleeping right next to each other.
Yeah, and they're just like, good friends. They're just really close friends.
They're like, yeah. I mean, it's just so weird because like you'll have some people be like, well, they could just be best bros. And I'm like, someone who has like so much sexual energy beforehand and then just like stops having sex because he's like hanging out with this one dude. I mean, sure, whatever. However you would like to interpret this. Well, this seems pretty gay to me. So.
Yeah, I remember seeing you tweet about that specific card because I think, you know, someone was like, there's not much queerness in your deck, which is like, what deck are you looking at? What fucking deck are you looking at? But my partner really loves the story of Gilgamesh. So then for the holidays this year, I bought them the print of the Two of Cups. The way that you have mirrored their heads bowing towards each other, I love that they're like, you know, big old fat guys, you know, they're not little babies. They're not like muscle guys. They got the big old bellies that, you know, that hard belly that you get when you're like a really tough, you know, wrestler guy. I just can't handle it. It's so cute. It's just.
Oh, thank you.
And I see those threads throughout. And I was thinking about La Llorona even in the way that's a queer story, I think.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a way that all these stories are queer to some degree or in a reading. And then especially when you pair them with tarot, especially when you pair them with your own experience, right? Because it seems to me, and please tell me where I'm wrong, that part of what is explored in this deck and in Beneath the Moon is that we all have different energies in us. You know, some people call those feminine energies. Some people call those masculine energies. I'm not a huge fan of, you know, labeling anything as anything because I'm like, who says a beard is masculine? I've seen lots of feminine beards in my life and they're beautiful. But there's so much there that it seems to me there's a piece about relatability that is also about queerness and also about gender and also not about any of that. I don't know. Like, I know that's like all like, here's some very heady things I can say that don't mean anything, but I mean something with them.
I mean, that feels like really awesome to hear that you have that like interpretation off of it. Cause you know, obviously like it's a huge project and I put like a lot of my heart and soul into it. So, you know, it's like one of those things where I feel like I can be very like clinical analytical when I'm talking about, here's this deck, this is what the story is saying or something. It's a lot harder when I'm talking about that uniqueness or the heart and soul of the deck, because it feels so much like just trying to analyze myself. So that's definitely a lot harder to do.
Like you said, it's cheaper therapy. So
yeah, it's like, oh, okay. So let me just psychoanalyze myself here. Yeah, being able to read myself, I think it's like saying, you know, when people be like, ah, what's your like animal that you relate to the most or something? I don't know. Being able to like talk about yourself and be like, this is the thing that represents me. I feel like I can't do that. Like, it's a lot easier when someone else tells you what you are than it is, I think, to talk about yourself in that context.
I just was cracking up because, like, every time I read a story, I'm just like, I am this character. And I'm like, that might be narcissism. I should probably look into that.
I do the same thing. I'm like, I'm obviously the hero of this story. I remember as a kid being like, wow, is every book about me?
This person feels sad. I felt sad before. Yeah.
Nah, I mean, like, more of like, when people talk about, like, what is your energy? Like, if your energy was an animal or a color, like, what would it be? And you can be like, I would be a falcon because blah, 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 blah. And, like, these are my characteristics, you know. I can't do that because I feel like, I don't know, like, what should I say? Like,
platypus.
like, a sloth because they hold on to things really tightly, but otherwise they don't want to move. Or you're like, I don't know. I mean, it's just like, I think it's like hard. It's easier if someone else tells me what my spirit color is or whatever, than it is for me to determine that myself. I don't know what my color, my aura is. Someone else should tell me. So
I think I would be a duck.
You'd be a duck? I could see that. I actually was going to say I would be a sloth because I like to sleep a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know if that's a good reason to choose an animal you relate to, but I'm like, we both like. I also told my therapist the other day, I was like, I'm pretty sure I'm part grizzly bear. I need the winters to myself. I just can't with people. But then spring comes around, I'm like, hey, everybody, what you been doing? It's very different. They're like, alive? Where have you been? I'm like, literally hibernating. I have literally been asleep for 3 months.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, I definitely have, like, not intense seasonal depression, but my life just plummets when I just don't have enough sun, you know? And I just feel like when the spring and summer starts coming around and the days get longer, I'm like, oh, yes, thank goodness, you know?
I think that's what a doctor would say about me, but I just prefer grizzly bear.
Right, right. You know, I'm sorry. You're right. That is the better definition. My mistake. Like,
this is my illness, but I describe it as a cute animal. So, okay, you've talked a little bit about the process of pulling together Tarot of the Divine. I'm like so fascinated. Mm. How long did it take you from sort of like your aha moment of like, oh, these fables and traditions fit really well with the different cards to like a complete deck?
Yeah, from initial concept to publication, I think was 4.5 years when it finally came out. Almost 5 years. Yeah.
It seems like it would have to be. I mean, there's so much art.
So I started drawing this, and I remember I finished the Major Arcana, which is like 22 cards, relatively quickly. Like they came out really easy because those are they're the most like iconic cards. And I think I finished that maybe like 4 months or something. I was like, wow, this is great. Like 22 out of 78. Like I just gotta finish the rest of these. This will be great. And I remember at that point, like I had just started on the Minor Arcana. Like I think I had done one card, and I was like, how long is this going to take anyway? And I remember Googling it, and they were like, it takes an average of 3 to 5 years to finish a tarot deck. And I remember thinking at the time, I was like, fuck that. I'll finish it quicker than that. Nope. No, that is not how that went. But yeah, it's average time to make a tarot deck is 3 to 5 years, which I think just about everyone that I've known who's made a tarot deck has hit in that exact same range. So, definitely one of those things where I'll like, you know, especially now that I finished a tarot deck, I've had people come up all the time being like, I'm thinking of making my own. I'm like, don't do it.
You'll run away.
Yeah. I'm like, it's 3 years of your life minimum. Are you sure about this? Like, all right, if you want it, but I'm like, I'll support you. You should do it. Follow your bliss. Don't let anyone stop you, but also don't do it.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
But you've done it now, so now you don't have to do it again.
Yeah, I know.
Done. Check.
Now I just have to make an Oracle deck, so that's all.
That's it. Just a little Oracle deck, no big deal.
Yeah, what's an Oracle deck between friends? I've also had other friends who have like finished tarot decks. So you're like, you finish it and you're like, thank God it's done. This is it. This is the end. And then immediately, like a month later, you're like, what if I were to draw another one? It's a little bit addictive when you're just like, oh, this is so nice to have like this kind of setup that you follow. And then you're like, oh, no, don't do it. Don't fall in this hole again.
Did you do them? I mean, obviously you did the major arcana. Did you do them like in the sequence? And then with the minor arcana, did you do them in sequence as well? Or did you skip around?
Yeah, I skipped around. I mean, I will say also by the time that I was making the Tarot of the Divine, I had made a number of other like large multi-piece projects. Not as big as 78, but like, you know, I have done like 20 before or something. Again, like I had tried to make a tarot deck before and they were like, this is like super technical. But I've learned over the years how to best trick myself into finishing large projects. And it's like, it's about learning what I find interesting. And that was the other thing with the Tarot of the Divine is I knew already that there was no way I was going to be able to draw 78 illustrations that were from like the same culture for a number of reasons. You know, one, I'm multiracial. I don't want to just harken on one culture. But also like the visuals, I knew that I was not going to be able to stay interested in drawing just one culture's visuals for 78 illustrations. I knew that wasn't going to be interesting to me. You know, like I was interested born like the different patterns of many different cultures. And so I knew that if I drew on different visual iconography for every single card that I would still be interested, that I could still look at each individual card as its own unique illustration. And then of course, the way that I bound all 78 cards together was to use the same color palette, regardless of where it was from, just to help keep it nice and unified. So again, so you can pick up a card that's like from Mexico and one from the Philippines and the cards still look like they belong to each other.
I hadn't even put that together, and I was going to ask, like, how did you give them such a unified feel? And so you think a big piece of that is that they're all in the same color scheme? Is that what you said?
Yeah, color palette. Set that up from the very beginning. The very first card, I was like, this is the color palette I'm going to use for all of them.
Okay, what was the very first card?
The Fool. That was the very first card. That was the one that was the easiest, just like it clicked. I was like, oh, of course. It's like the Little Mermaid is the Fool card. You know, especially because the Fool card is kind of the full circle. It's like the beginning and the ending. It's the connecting loop. There's also these visuals of like leaving your animalistic side to become more human, to become more like evolved, I guess. That's kind of leaving the subconscious behind to enter into the consciousness. So there's just like a lot of like imagery that it just makes sense, like with a mermaid. Because, you know, again, the water represents subconsciousness. You're leaving the subconsciousness for land. You know, she's leaving her animalistic side to become more human. There's a lot of stuff that's happening there that I'm like, of course, it just makes so much sense. These go hand in hand so well. Can't remember what my second card was. Might have been the Lovers, but at least super, super early on was the Death card. It was either number two or number three. I'd have to like go back and look at it because that one's the Bear King Palamon or the Tale of Cupid and Psyche, depending on where you want to get it from. But that one also was like, it just made so much sense to pair the two of them together.
And that's one of your favorite stories, right?
Oh, they're all my favorite stories, so I can't really say. Yeah, I can't say that it is like more favorite than other, but it is. I definitely do really love that story. I really love that story, I think, because it's one of those stories that is the most misunderstood. I certainly didn't understand it until like someone else had broken it down for me. But it's like one of those classic stories where a girl is told, like, whatever you do, don't open this box or don't go into this door or don't look at this one thing, you know? And whenever you read those stories, like the fairy tales or something, you're like, this dumb broad, why did she like do the thing that she was sold specifically not to, you know? And you're like, you know, and then there's some people said like, but then there would be no story. And it's like, yeah, there'd be no story. But the best breakdown I heard of it was that this symbolizes leaving your childhood behind. You know, like as a child, you're told like, don't touch this, don't do this, you know, don't go here, don't do that thing. And, you know, like you listen to these things because the authority is telling you that. But at some point, you have to stop listening to the authority and you have to make your own decisions and your own like thoughts around it and also face the repercussions for your actions. So, you know, here in this, like she did the one thing that she wasn't supposed to. She has a candle and looks at the curtain and sees like what's in bed with her. And that, of course, like shatters the world that she's living in. And now she can never go back to that world. Like she can never go back to this castle with like this mysterious presence that was there with her. And you're like, oh man, this was like a great castle. She was having a great life. Like, why did she do that? But it was also necessary for her to do the forbidden so that she could actually learn the truth and move on. Because that wasn't even a real relationship that she was in beforehand. Like in this like mysterious like palace where she was getting everything. She had to break the rules and face the consequences, but that also like was what allowed her to grow up and become like a fully realized human being. So I think it's a great match for the death card where you're like,
this I was is like, super you are scary. Blowing my fucking mind.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, when I like finally like had that broken down to me, I was like, yes, okay, wow, all of these stories make sense now. Like it is absolutely necessary for Pandora to open the box because we cannot become full adults until we do the forbidden. That's what I think about like the death card. It's like a great thing where it's like, this isn't a bad thing, but you can't re-become a child anymore. Like you've left childhood behind. It is gone. But you know, it's necessary for you to do that. So it's like, it's gonna hurt. It's gonna be awful. You're gonna have to go through all these trials and tribulations. But you know, it is necessary for you to become a fully realized human being.
I love that. I'm going to have so much to think about when the death card comes up next time I'm doing a reading.
Yeah. For me, it's really cool because it's just like, it's such a misunderstood story. Think about that anytime you now in the future read a story where someone is explicitly told, don't open this thing. And you're thinking, this person is so dumb. Why would they open the thing? And it's like, well, it's because they have to, you know.
Think about next time I'm reading that story, I'm going to go write one. That's so good. I'm like, sold, done. I'm in.
Yeah, I can't remember which author I read that particular breakdown from. In fact, because I read a lot of books on like mythology, like not just collections, but also like people who are analyzing them. Anyway,
well, good job, whatever author did that. You changed my life.
Yeah.
So you're very bored all the time, it seems, because you're also over at Revolt. No. You're over there, and you're a cover artist in residence, and you just released back in April the interlocking witch blood covers for issues one through five, and they look hella cool. But also, what was that process like? And do you like being? I'm guessing you do, but a cover artist in residence, and can you tell us what's coming down the pike for you?
Yeah, that was really cool because Vault had asked me to do a couple of like covers for them before for various things. And then they asked me to do a cover for Witchblood. So I did a cover for them. And then they were like, hey, it would be really awesome if you could be part of our like cover artist residency program. I think there's like 8 of us. Don't quote me on that number. But like we're all doing a whole bunch of like variant covers for the various lines. And it's really cool because they get to have a cover artist who does variants for every single issue of like a various line. So I'm doing the ones for Witchblood and Blue Flame and a third series that is yet to be announced. But yeah, that's really awesome just because like I've done variant covers before for like Image or for IDW, but this is like the first time that I was really allowed to do a whole set where they're like, hey, we need you for like all 10 issues. And it was the first time that I've been able to know that I'm going to be doing a whole bunch of them. I'm like, it gives me the opportunity to make some interconnecting covers. I don't know. It just seemed like a cool idea. I was like, oh, this seems great. Because then, you know, you kind of want to collect each cover to make a larger image. It just seemed really fun. And I did it for Witchblood. And they Vault was like, oh, this is awesome. Can you do this for like all the covers that you're doing with us? I was like, oh, sure. Yeah, it takes a longer time to set up initially just because, yeah, it is like five covers trying to figure out how it's going to look good together. But then each cover itself is a little easier to make. That makes sense.
Totally. It was very surprising to me because I saw the individual covers for Witch Blood. And then I saw them all together and I was like, I didn't think they'd come together like that at all.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like really fun because it's like trying to figure out how to make each cover appealing on its own, but then also appealing like as a set. Because obviously it would really suck if you got issue 3 or something and the cover just looks, this sucks. But you need like 2 other covers to even make it worthwhile. But it was definitely inspired by like really long-running manga. They'll have like the edge of the comic, like the side.
The binding.
Yes, thank you so much. Where like they'll have a long interlocking image on the binding, which looks really cool when you have like all 20 volumes collected or something. Looks awesome on your wall.
It sounds awesome. Now I want to go collect some manga. I read a bit of manga, but I haven't been collecting like the physical versions. And now I'm like, I shall change that. I'm a little bit intense about complete sets. So I have to be really careful to like not do things that are not.
This will get you. Yeah. It'll get you hard.
It could get me into it. But that would also look so cool on your shelf. I was just thinking about, you know, how everyone's doing that weird thing where they, I think it's weird if you do it at home. I'm not judging. I just think it's weird where they put the pages out so it looks uniform.
Yes.
And I can't handle that because I'm like, how would I find any of my books?
Yeah. It looks very Pinterest. You know?
Yes. But imagine having manga shelves. Yeah. Much superior. Yeah. That's the way manga is superior to comics. I'm just joshing y'all.
Everybody, I hope you're enjoying the show. We're enjoying the time that we spend with you. We have made a Patreon. There is more episodes on it. You can listen to all of the episodes on it if you subscribe at any level. You could do $2, you could do $10, you could do $20. We've had a few who did $20, listener. And while we don't expect that from everybody, if you wanted to give us $20 a month, that'd be chill. And you could also give us 2, or you could literally give us none. Go ahead and check out the Patreon anyway, because there's a ton of free episodes. We love it when you support the show because it means that we can keep making the show. And that's always really nice. But also, just check it out. Go listen to our free cage match or the Ghostwriter Corner, or some of SE's comic reviews of webcomics, many things. Also, I mean, didn't we just do a whole episode about Amalgam Comics? We've done a ton of things. You can listen to so much of it for free. So go check out the Patreon if you've run out of episodes in your regular feed, which some people have, I've heard. Go to patreon.com/bitchesoncomics. You got to spell the whole thing out. You can't search us. We're 18 plus because we say fuck a lot.
I know that I Am Not Starfire is coming out at the end of July. I know that there's not a ton out right now. You know, we've seen the cover. I think there's an excerpt a couple places. But what are you most excited for people to get, you know, the full thing in their hands?
I mean, we talked a bit before, but like Mariko Tamaki is a great storyteller. She writes characters that are just super endearing and you just want to be friends with. It's cool also because like Mandy is, you know, the first superhero story with a superhero character that I have made from scratch, you know what I mean? It's not like Zatanna, who is like a pre-existing character. Like Mandy doesn't exist. Her mom exists, Starfire, but it's really fun to kind of do something from the ground up.
Well, and her character design is so cool. And I know that people were shitty about it because people sometimes suck. But I love the idea of Starfire having this goth daughter, you know, also queer, which is delightful. But it's nice to see, because I think young teens do define themselves and old teens. It doesn't matter. Everybody defines themselves to some degree against their parents. Yeah. And so I thought that was really clever. How much of that was you and Mariko? Did you work together on it?
So like I got the script and like Mariko didn't have kind of any specifics about it. Just kind of like the way that she described it was just like, you know, Starfire, she's like this alien. She's super hot. She's like a model. Like she gets interviewed all the time. Like everyone knows who she is. She isn't conscious about her like body at all. You know, she's just wearing like super skimpy outfits all the time. She's just like completely liberated and free from that standpoint. You know, and then like kind of how do you have like a daughter who doesn't have superpowers, which is like, again, the thing that everyone knows Starfire for, you know, just kind of like what would be like the visual opposite of Starfire in a lot of ways. I think that their relationship is really awesome. It's kind of hard to see it in just like the 5 pages of excerpts we've had displayed, but they have this like super sincere mother-daughter relationship where Starfire is super supportive of Mandy, but she just doesn't understand her daughter because it's like all the things that Starfire loves, like going out in the sun and like meeting new people and like partying and like, you know, being friends with everyone. Those just like aren't the things that come naturally to Mandy, and it's not the things that Mandy is interested in particularly. You know, so like it's not that Starfire doesn't support Mandy. It's more that she just doesn't know how to support Mandy, which I think is like a very sincere interaction between a mother and a daughter.
I am so looking forward to reading it. I don't think I have it on my pull list yet, but I'm going to go at it right now. I'm going to go email Amalgam. I think I've given them like 3 free ads lately. I'm like, Amalgam Philly, they'll help you out. They're always good to me. They're like, we got you. Here's your comics. I'm like, oh, they came in the mail. This is so beautiful.
I love getting presents for myself, you know, mm-hmm. especially when they come later. I'm like, oh my God, what did I get myself? I forgot.
Yeah, I had forgotten that I'd ordered the Willow trade paperback. Mm-hmm. It's coming. Pretty excited. Sarah, did you have other questions for Yoshi?
Yeah, I guess I just have one more question, which is, I mean, we just talked about all of the very cool things that you've done. Is there something that you haven't had a chance to do that you would like to do in the future?
I guess like more clothing lines. I want to work on that some more. I ran a Kickstarter to make a embroidered bomber jacket.
A cool as fuck bomber jacket.
Thank you. Yeah, I want to just do more of that. So it's also one of those things that I really hope conventions start again, because I ran that Kickstarter and I got the items like middle of pandemic. So it's been really hard to just be like, hey guys, I got these jackets that are really cool. You can wear them in your house. so I hope to have conventions soon so that people can actually see them IRL and then also would like to wear them IRL. And I just want to make some more jackets and some more like t-shirts and some more like various clothing, just like stuff like that. I'd love to keep doing that.
That is so cool. I wish I had one of those bomber jackets. I'm going to have to look it up, but I hadn't seen it. But that's just a testament to how much really cool stuff you've done is that I completely missed the bomber jacket.
I know. Sometimes I feel a little like, I guess like all over the place, because there are just like so many different things that I'm like working on or have done. And I'm like, you know, sometimes they'll have a portfolio day on Twitter and they say, in 4 images, show stuff that you're working on. I'm like, well, okay, so I got this tarot deck. I got this comic book. I got these jackets. I also have some of my own illustrations. You know, just feels like there's a lot going on. And I understand that completely. Sometimes I wonder if I should like cut off the heads of a couple of different projects and like refine it in some more. But then I would get bored. So here we are.
I think that Sarah and I can both relate to that.
I was like, cannot relate. Don't understand.
As Sarah's frantically making 28 pieces of art or 23 or whatever. Yeah. Yes. Amazing. Well, Yoshi, this has been absolutely fucking delightful. I am so excited that we got to speak with you, talk about Tarot of the Divine, Beneath the Moon, I Am Not Starfire, Zatanna and the House of Secrets, which I didn't say, but is so cute.
Thank you.
It's so bouncy and bubbly and still has, you know, lots of layers of emotion and whatnot. I just really, really loved it. So had to add that in here at the end.
Yeah. Oh, I guess that's a thing. If I could put that into the universe, I would love to make a Clarion comic, especially because I did an initial drawing with him where for his outfit, he was wearing a skirt. And I was like, this is what I want. I want Clarion wearing a skirt and I want to draw this comic. So Just going to put that out into the universe that someday I'll do that.
I'm also going to put that out into the universe.
Yeah, I love that character.
That's what the world needs.
So funny in the old school Jack Kirby issues where Clarion first shows up and is just like being such a little shit.
He's a twerp. Like, I love him. So, I mean, again, like it's like any of these kind of like snarky trickster type characters are just, they have my heart and soul. So that's what I want. So.
I'm just like staring off in the distance like, can you imagine?
Yeah, exactly. This could be our lives. We could have this in this universe.
It could be. Yoshi, if you want people to find you on social media and online, where can they find you?
Probably the best thing is to just go to my website, which is yoshioshitani.com. And then from there, it has links out to my Twitter, to my Instagram, to my shop, and any other future social medias I might have.
Yes. Someone's inventing a social media right now that we're all going to be on.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, my fiance, he actually keeps up to date with all that stuff. So, like, it feels like every other week he's just, like, banging on my door being like, download this app and get your name. And I'm like, oh my God, all right, fine, I will. So I have so many apps that I like haven't done anything with, but I've gotten my name. So just in case it blows up. So
no one else has got that. That's good. That's good. Well, Yoshi, it's been a damn delight. This is very inspiring. I'm going to definitely go into my evening with just like a very full and happy heart. So I appreciate your time. Sarah, you know I love you. You're always an angel. What's your kitty's name, Yoshi?
Oh, Gozu is the older one and Chizu is the younger one.
Okay. Chizu, you're doing a great job, so sweetie. Cute. Just keep doing your thing.
Just keep
Gozu,
meowing.
I'm sure you are too. Love that. And listeners, as always, we could be here without you, but it'd be terribly awkward. So thank you for being here with us yet again for another Pride interview extravaganza. Yoshi, you take care of yourself.
Yeah, you guys too. Thank you so much.
We are a podcast that is all about making comic books more accessible to LGBTQ folks and women. So if you have a question about anything related to comics, comic adaptations, pop culture in general, conventions, cosplay, you name it, that's what we're here for. You can send us your questions at bitchesoncomics@gmail.com. Unfortunately, Gmail does not like the word bitch. They're pretty judgy about it. So we can't have it spelled out. It is bitchesoncomics@gmail.com. And do you remember there's no I in bitch?
If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by rating and reviewing us on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Sarah Century, and you can find me at www.sarahcentury.com and Twitter and Instagram. Still Sarah Century on those.
I'm Essie Fleenor. You can learn more about me at essiefleenor.com. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @SE_Fleenor.
Bitches on Comics is recorded by Kate Warner, who plays in the band Churchfire. You can find them at churchfiremusic.com. Our music is recorded by Katie Taylor, who plays as Earth Control Pill. You can find her music at earthcontrolpill.bandcamp.com.
Bitches on Comics is recorded in Denver, Colorado. We want to recognize the indigenous peoples who have inhabited and do inhabit this land. The Arapaho Nation, the Ute Nation, the Cheyenne Nation, and others who have been erased from our history and collective memories through colonization.